Hello and welcome to the Turkey Book Talk podcast. I'm William Armstrong. I write reviews every week for the Hürriyet Daily News, and this podcast is my chance to speak to authors about a newly released book on Turkey and its region. This week I reviewed National and State Identity in Turkey, The Transformation of the Republic's Status in the International System, written by Tony Alaranta of the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. The book argues that the ascendance of populist political Islam in Turkey was crucially aided by the post-Cold War, post-9/11 international political landscape. In Tony Alaranta's account, international conditions combined with Turkey's internal politics to legitimize a crude power grab on the part of Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the AKP, dressed up in the language of liberalization and human rights. You can find a link to the review on my blog and a link to the edited version of my interview with Tony Alaranta at the Hürriyet Daily News. I started by asking him about what first prompted him to research a book about this subject.
Well, there was of course several reasons, but the first of all is that I believe Turkey's direction is very important in terms of international relations. I had previously concentrated more on purely domestic issues and the various expressions of Kemalism in recent decades, but it is quite obvious that the AKP came through its electoral hegemony, a very dominant force. In my view, it was clear some years ago already that one needed to look much more critically the powerful interpretations of Turkey's political history that basically created a very widespread expectation that the AKP would democratize Turkey. So, yeah, I think this was the main reason that to look more analytically and critically those interpretations, because in my view, they had become an obstacle to scrutinize the AKP experience. So in this sense, the starting point was very common inducement for any scholar to write a book. I thought the existing literature on AKP experience was handicapped to analyze what was going on in Turkey.
And at one point you write that irrespective of what we think about Turkey's potentiality to become a world power, the assertion that it would be such with the Muslim label now sounds completely natural to many of us. That's a quote. You argue in the book that this is actually a very recent international conception of Turkey's state identity. Could you explain that a little?
Yeah, I think this is very important to keep in mind that we are talking about a recent phenomenon, especially in more popularized discussions. The fact that, as the saying goes, 99% of the population are Muslims, this has, during the last decade, produced an idea that Turkey is really a naturally Muslim nation, and even more that the Turkish actions as a sovereign state operating in the international field has something crucial to do with its population's Islamic faith. This has become very widespread idea. And my argument is that these both claims, I mean, about Turkey being a Muslim nation and a state, are very recent developments. Because, first of all, the widely disseminated and reproduced Turkish national identity started to have increasingly Islamic Turkish content since the 80s. That's true. But it is only during the AKP era that Turkey has declared itself as being the protector of a specific Muslim cause in the international field across the globe. And I think this is a very radical departure from the previous era, when Turkey wanted itself to be seen as a modern nation state, taking its place in the what they thought was a universal civilization characterized by cultural modernity. In this sense, to the previous political elite, the idea of being seen as a specifically Muslim power would have been astonishing and even insulting, because the Kemalist foreign policy tradition, in that tradition, a religious identification was definitely something anachronistic, something that defined a past world. So in this sense, in my view, the idea of Turkey as a state actor being a Muslim power is an AKP invention. Of course, there are some elements in the current international order, and especially in the way we are speaking about international relations nowadays, that we can observe these kind of essentializing and particularistic religious cultural demands they've been legitimized during the last two decades. The talk about the alliance of civilizations, for example, or the idea of Turkey being able to function as some kind of bridge between the Western and Islamic civilizations, they all signals this new way of talking. But yeah, I think it's important to emphasize that this is actually a recent phenomenon.
And you particularly refer to two big events, which is the end of the Cold War and 10 years later, the aftermath of the September the 11th terror attacks. And you kind of identify these as key events that opened up space for Turkey internationally. How did this affect the internal Turkish dynamics, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, definitely. Of course, these are very wide topics with many components, but I guess the very important reason or idea in this is the ability to think beyond the nation-state paradigm, which characterized the whole whole Cold War era. But yeah, the main point is the interlinking of domestic changes in Turkey and the international reality emerging after the Cold War. Because if we think these major events, the end of the Soviet bloc and the almost never ever expanding horizons of global free market capitalism, they created a widespread expectation that the opening of the economy would drive onwards liberal democratic regimes everywhere. And of course, there was a lot of talk about the end of political ideologies as well. And in more intellectual terms, this was the period, especially during the 1990s, when the Western academia became convinced that the period of classical or high modernity was irreversibly over, and that we were living some sort of post-world, that is post-modern, post-ideological, post-enlightenment, or post-rationalist, and then that there was a sort of global world merging. And this all coincided with the domestic changes in Turkey, when during the Turgut Özal era, there was this strong neoliberal restructuring of Turkey's economy, and this was accompanied with this strange combination of market liberalism and very conservative social atmosphere, which was actually similar that had taken place during the Thatcher and Reagan era in the Western world as well. So in this situation, Turkey's political elite was able to have a new orientation as the fear of Soviet aggression decreased significantly, and there was this widespread new discourse of that enabled political leaders to look beyond the nation-state paradigm.
Both of those events also, particularly September 11th, created what you describe, I think, as a structural demand for this moderate Muslim democracy label. And yeah. Turkey became, for pretty much 10 years, this kind of poster boy of this paradigm. I mean, how did that develop over time? Why did this happen, in your opinion? And what, I mean, do you think it was a conscious decision by the AKP to accept it? Or do you think it was something that was maybe kind of thrust upon it and it wasn't really expecting it and things developed in that way?
I think there were elements of both, but these 9/11 terrorist attacks indeed suddenly seemed to discredit all that previous talk of post-ideological politics. And there was and still is today many quarters who think that the global world is essentially conflict-ridden and especially defined by a struggle between large-scale civilizational entities. And this is, of course, the infamous Huntingtonian world, or at least how it was understood. And yeah, in this situation, when there was this widely perceived antagonism between the so-called Western world and the so-called Islamic world, there emerged this idea that we have this long-time ally of the West, NATO country, Turkey, and it was indeed often suggested that it could function as a kind of balancer or bridge between the antagonistic entities. And this was, at the same time, the Turkey's European Union membership was given a boost with the declaration of the official candidate status in the Helsinki summit of 1999, and the negotiations started in 2005. So there was indeed a huge expectation both in the USA and within the EU circles that Turkey was more or less destined to become a role model, a liberal democracy ruled by Muslim conservatives, who had allegedly managed to move beyond the political Islamist position and that they were now embracing democratic pluralist values. So yeah, there was this structural demand, and I believe that the leading cadres of the AKP party, they realized this, and they saw it as an opportunity. They used the bridge metaphor themselves to a certain point, but in recent years they dropped it and it became unfunctional. In my opinion, all the reforms of the AKP's first tenure, for example, they have been very much instrumental. Their purpose was to delegitimize the political opponents and consolidate the AK Party power. So I guess, yeah, I would definitely say that the EU and the USA should look in the mirror, because they should take at least some responsibility for this, legitimizing the AKP within this discourse.
Yeah, and part of this is the idea for a while that was going around. You don't really hear of it much anymore, probably for obvious reasons. But this idea that the AKP was, quote, post-Islamist, became really widespread. And many people thought it was just the kind of technocratic party that was just interested in modernizing Turkey's economy without pursuing any kind of religious identity agenda. How did this perception take root, and why was it, in your opinion, mistaken?
I would say that the aforementioned events in the international field were preceded by a very long debate in Turkey regarding the so-called Second Republic, this İkinci Cumhuriyet, which was reproduced by influential liberal intellectuals who claimed that the Kemalist project and the Kemalist ideology had very early on hijacked Turkey's modernization process, and that the Kemalist ideology had become, with its secular nationalist discourse, the main obstacle for the democratization of Turkey. And in this situation, the AKP came in, largely composed of reformists of Milli Görüş, the Turkish version of political Islam. And this is, as you said, this is a very well-known story. But the problem is that the story is full of inconsistencies and half-baked arguments. The liberals obviously thought that they had domesticated a party of political Islamists to their own agenda, whereas the AKP cadres obviously embarked on a very different project, one that can be called what I call an Islamic conservative state project. Its most essential element, in my view, is that the AKP has tried to create a kind of social political order where it is impossible to criticize the AK Party from the liberal and secular positions, because this is the situation we are at the moment. It's very difficult for the opposition to rise against the party from these positions, because they have been so much delegitimized. And this is done by claiming that all troubles in Turkey emanate from the Kemalist tutelary regime, which, according to this narrative, ruled Turkey from 1923 to 2002. And in this narrative, the real nation, the pious conservative Muslims, have been harassed and marginalized all through the Republican decades, only being liberated by the alleged liberal conservative Democrat AKP.
Just on that point, you dismiss this widespread Islamic conservative idea about the sort of omnipotent and oppressive Kemalist state or tutelage regime as a kind of myth. But even if the idea of this secular elite is crude and incomplete in that account, would you not say that it's not still a problematic reality that developed its own vested interests and established itself in power structures in Turkey that weren't accountable? And it wasn't this great big monolithic thing that the kind of crude myth describes, but it was still a problematic formation for decades.
Yeah, of course it was a problematic. I would say that the state has been a problematic thing in Turkey, but my problem is this with this definition of it being a Kemalist state, because the way I see it is that the Kemalism represents this kind of radical modernization, and I would talk about the Kemalist state in Turkey only during the one-party era of the Republican People's Party. Afterwards, what I think we have seen in Turkey is a nationalist conservative state. But of course, there were groups within the bureaucracy and groups within the army who afterwards used these Kemalist slogans in their own agenda. And of course, there is a hint of truth in all this, in the sense that, of course, the previous state elite, it did look down upon other people, especially conservative Muslims. My point is that this is not something terribly unique to Turkey. This is how the modernizers and the urban elites have behaved in all European states as well. But yeah, there's a hint of truth within, and that's what makes this so powerful. What I do agree is that in terms of the ethnic definition of Turkishness, I think the Kemalists made a terrible sin. They should have seen by the 1960s that it's not possible to define nation through this ethnic, strong ethnic definition. And at that point, the Kemalist circles, they were left-wing oriented at the time, during the 60s. They should have made a deal with the progressive Kurds and come up with a different idea. So I think in that sense, in regarding the Kurdish issue, I think that the Kemalist tradition has been a tremendous burden to Turkey.
Now, just to take a kind of slight left turn, I thought one of the most interesting parts of the book that I actually don't manage to address in the review was the section on Ismail Cem, who served as Turkey's foreign minister from 1997 to 2002. And in many ways, his tenure exemplified the kind of positive aspects of Turkey opening up to the region after the Cold War. And you contrast this in the book favorably with the AKP's more ideological approach. Could you just describe what the substance of this difference is?
Well, I think the important thing is to observe that, yes, this is the matrix of what happened later, that during Ismail Cem's foreign ministry period, this opening up indeed took place, and Turkey's foreign policy elite learned to look world around it in a different way. Cem criticized what he called Kemalist foreign policy tradition, that it was too strictly dividing the world to enemy and friendly states or Western and Islamic world. And Cem took a very practical approach in claiming that Turkey could use as an asset its cultural and even religious affinity with the Middle Eastern countries to boost its vital interest and its economic interests. And the reason why I emphasize this in the book is that I think this is the kind of practical foreign policy approach that used to be used as a definition to the AKP's foreign policy, that it's able to look beyond the strict nation-state paradigm. But my point is indeed that this kind of practical vision is actually more suitable to define Ismail Cem's foreign policy, whereas the AKP has gone beyond this idea of just using some cultural and religious affinity into this very ideological view that the world is strictly divided between the Western world and the Islamic world, and that the Western world is actually non-legitimate in the region and that is immoral, and that the AKP and Turkey represent some kind of more righteous, morally more higher civilization. We really started to see this after the Arab Spring revolutions, because if you look back to the Milli Görüş tradition, and if you look back to the Davutoğlu's writings from the 1990s, you have this idea that Turkey should defend the Muslim Brotherhood forces all through the Middle East, and when the historical opportunity comes, it should help push these forces in power. And obviously, the AKP leadership thought that this historical situation came with the Arab Spring. And they have stuck on this idea, even though the realities do not correspond with that idea anymore. So in that sense, I think the main point is that İsmail Cem's ideas, even if he and the AKP leaders use this same kind of concepts, they nevertheless originate from a very different kind of worldview. Cem is basically redefining in the new situation the old Kemalist foreign policy approach, whereas the AKP has based its foreign policy to its own domestic Islamic conservative state project.
Just to conclude, I'd like to look forward. And of course, at the moment, Turkey's in the midst of a great big shift, it seems, ahead of yet another election. It's very difficult to make predictions, but it looks like this sort of populist political Islam of the AKP has been for 13 years predicated on this idea that it is the majority and it represents the authentic nation, and somehow this is kind of inherently majoritarian in a way. So I just wondered, now that the AKP has lost this parliamentary majority, and if it can't get that back and it can't form a majority again, what do you think that does to this project, which has basically based itself on this idea that it is the majority? And how do you think it can reformulate or reconceptualize itself if it's not in that majority anymore? Because it seems like that's almost anathema to the actual meaning of the party. The actual identity of the party is based on this idea that it is the majority, and that it is the only true representative, the only authentic representative, the only legitimate representative of the Turkish nation. So what do you think can happen if there is an election in November and the AKP can't regain this majority?
Well, that is, of course, a very difficult question. But if we look at the signals at the moment, obviously the reason why we are at where we are at the moment is that it is indeed not the PKK or the ethno-nationalist Kurdish movement that actually threatens the AKP project. It is the HDP, the Kurdish party's ability to emerge as some kind of liberal democratic movement. This challenges indeed the idea what the AKP has been propagating all these years, because it demonstrates that not even the Kurds are that kind of monolithic Islamic conservative constituency that the AKP pictures the whole Turkish nation. There was this widespread expectation, if we come back to the earlier point, that political inclusion and economic development will moderate the political Islamists. Well, now we are witnessing a very significant, even a historical course of events, in the sense that if it indeed comes to be the case that the AKP is unable to get back its absolute majority, then we come to the question that will these political Islamists give back their power in that kind of situation? But on the other hand, we are only now starting to really see how strong is the ideological layer of this party. I mean, if the economy starts to crumble, and if we have these indicators that the majority does not back this movement, of course, that's a tricky question, because AKP got 41% of votes in the previous election, and it will probably get something like 40 again. So it's a very interesting moment in that sense, because it may turn out to be either the indicator that indeed the political Islamists will step down, or on the other hand, it may also prove that this very widespread idea of political inclusion, moderating these groups and making them more democratic, will prove to be a failure. But that's a very tricky issue, of course.
Yeah, and I also think that one thing that people don't really pay enough attention to is the idea that now that after 13 years the AKP has been in power, it's obvious that for a lot of officials, senior officials in the AKP, the question is basically if they lose power and they don't have the immunity that office gives them, they're basically facing court cases. And that's particularly the case for Erdogan. I mean, it's quite clear that as soon as he leaves office, if he ever leaves office, there's going to be a queue of people trying to take him to court for various things. So that kind of creates this extremely dangerous situation, I think, where for the AKP officials, it's basically office or bust, and they can't, that really restricts their room for movement, you know, it makes them much more paranoid, and it means that they're going to be less willing to kind of yield power when the time comes. And I think that's kind of a dynamic that people miss. They kind of talk about Turkey, it's a kind of normal country where a party loses power and is just willingly going to give it up, when they know that the consequences of giving up power in that way could be very grave for themselves.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. This is something that will obviously play a major part. And of course, there is also this more, should I say, idealistic idea that, of course, these people seem to genuinely believe that they represent some kind of historical current that is destined to rule Turkey. They always speak about the Dava, the Islamic cause, and that they are just an expression of a historical movement. This is, of course, rhetoric, but it seems that many of the AKP cadres actually believe in this themselves. So there's these both ideas that losing their power would indeed be very problematic for them, because all of these corruption allegations and all this stuff you mentioned, and then there is this more ideological aspect in it as well.
That was Tony Alaranta, whose book called National and State Identity in Turkey has just been published by Roman. There's a link to my review of the book via my blog, as well as to this interview on Hürriyet Daily News. Thanks, Tony, for taking the time to speak to me, and thanks everybody for listening. Tellidir, tellim anam, tellidir, tellidir amma.